In 1987, Anita Wiley was raising her family in Detroit. She was 29 years old.
Very young woman, grew up in Detroit in the 1980s, kind of in the prime of her life. Wonderful mother, wonderful person, really a real pillar to our family.
And then she disappeared, leaving behind a 13-year-old son. Flash forward to 2020, when new DNA technology is able to identify a set of long unidentified remains as Anita's. And her son, who's been searching for her his whole life, plus a sister who never knew Anita existed, finally begin to get some answers. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Anita's sister is none other than the Emmy Award-winning journalist, producer, and Fresh Air co-host, Tanya Mosley. Together with Anita's son, Antonio Wiley, she's chronicling Anita's story in a new audio documentary. The podcast is called She Has a Name. It's all about family, healing, and uncovering truths. It's also about what life was really like in Detroit during the 1980s.
Detroiters know that two things can be true about a place. Spend enough time with my mother, and she'll find a way to get in her favorite quote that speaks to this.
Charles Dickens, it was the best of times and the worst of times. It resonates with me so much because out of the worst struggles, there's always good that comes out of it if you can endure it. You know, if you can go through it, you always come out better.
I know why she loves that Charles Dickens quote so much. It pretty much sums up life. What it means to be from Detroit.
Tanya Mosley and Antonio Wiley joined us to talk about their experience unraveling and sharing such a personal mystery. Tanya says the story of this project really starts with Antonio.
On so many levels, the genesis of this story started way back in 1987. And Antonio making a declaration to himself that he was going to find answers, even at 14 years old, which, as you can imagine, if your parent goes missing and those around you are moving on with life, it's the only thing that you can think of. It's the only thing that you know, and it takes up so much of your brain power. And so for really Antonio's entire adult life, he's been trying to piece together what happened. Where did she go? Did something nefarious happen to her? Did she leave on her own? All of those things. Antonio and I met in the early 2000s. I did not know I had a sister. She was my sister on my father's side, and I didn't know my father. And over the last 20 years, Antonio and I have forged a relationship, an auntie-nephew relationship. And it wasn't until 2020 through a program called Operation United in Detroit, where they're able to exhume the bodies of people at a gravesite for unknown victims of murder or deceased people and match that DNA, which Antonio had given to police in 2016, that Anita had been buried there soon after she disappeared and that she was a victim of murder. For us, that's where the beginning of the story started for us to tell this story. When that happened, Antonio and Anita were the first match for Operation United, and he was getting phone calls from journalists who wanted to tell the story, and they were telling the story in the ways that we tell stories as journalists, you know, 2-minute pieces, maybe 3 minutes, but not a lot more. And Antonio wanted to be able to tell his mother's story in a way that told the totality of who she was and what she was going through in Detroit during that time period. And that's how this podcast was born.
Antonio, obviously, Tanya was well immersed into the world of storytelling and audio storytelling and podcasts with all this. There are any number of reasons why somebody who's experienced this kind of loss would not really want to talk about it with everybody. What was it that made you feel like this was something you were ready to take on?
You know, I kind of arrived at a space and place in my life that I just wanted to, you know, A, get answers, but then B, just put the story out there in such a way where other people can identify and relate to if they were going through something similar. you know, the trauma, you know, such trauma that, you know, I experienced in my life really kept me from talking about it or speaking of it publicly for a long time. But then, you know, with conversation with Taya in the early years of meeting her and getting to know her, we opened up a conversation, a dialogue around this, and it grew, you know, over years to the point that, you know, once my mom's remains were recovered, we were able to begin to, you know, a process of healing and reconciliation for ourselves, for our family. But then also the genesis of telling a story in a way that could serve us, but then also serve the community that's going to be listening to it over the years.
Your story opens up a lot of things about family life, but it's also a very vivid picture of Detroit in the 80s. And Tanya notes in the series, it's pretty different than Detroit as it's experienced in a lot of parts of the city today. It was a very violent time in the city's history at a time when crack cocaine was really taking a toll. And you were both kind of growing up in the middle of that. How would you characterize those years? Are there things that you wanted people to know who maybe only know Detroit today?
Yeah, Detroit was a very volatile environment, at least from a child's perspective. You know, it was something that I wouldn't say was normal, but it seemed to have been characterized in such a way that shaped the narrative and perspective of a lot of people that was dealing with it as adults during that time. So, you know, Detroit then versus what it would become eventually, it was kind of a downward spiral. And, you know, I kind of coined the term of urban trauma. I think that's kind of the best way to describe it, because the resources were drying up. The city was, you know, headed towards bankruptcy, as we know. And just the way things were being done throughout the city as a whole, administratively, you know, with community engagement, things like that, those resources were drying up really fast. So, you know, the city was a special place to us that were born there. And we tried to cling on to that, the remnants of it, at least as much as we could. But, you know, during that process, you know, we were losing loved ones, and it was just a really volatile time. So, you know, we made it through, but now, you know, I think we're in the process of trying to rebuild. So, you know, I think our past is definitely helping to shape our future here.
Yes. And, you know, one thing that I was reflecting on was when I was growing up, I was always hearing stories of the Detroit that was through my mother and my aunts, through their eyes, the Motown years when Detroit was the automotive capital and downtown was a vibrant place. My mother would talk about being a kid and going to the down Woodward and looking at the Hudson storefront. And when I was a young girl growing up in Detroit, it was destitute down there. I could never see it. I would, you know, it was always, the vibrancy of Detroit was always in the past, but there was such a deep love and vibrancy to the stories that they were telling me. And in my everyday life, I could see, you know, Detroiters are just like, Detroit is like one big Southern town as far as hospitality and love and like connection. And so while we were hearing all these stories in the world about our city, and we were also living with it, like, you know, the depictions of Detroit that we'd see in the media, the 60 Minute stories that we were seeing about Detroit being a war zone, those were the realities for us. But at the same time, we were fiercely protective and sort of offended by those depictions of Detroit because it didn't tell the whole story. And so now you fast forward to now, I'm seeing more and more stories about Detroit. And this is one story that is about one family, but it also tells a larger story about the city. To understand what happened to Anita, you have to understand what was going on in the city during that time. And you have to understand the nuance of it. The good people who lived there and were trying to survive and make a living during that time and the decisions that they had to make, and also the divestment that was happening all around them at the same time. And the influx of drugs.
It's time for a break. When we come back.
You know, this has been the most ambitious project that I've ever done because it's testing my journalistic might.
More in a minute. Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity,
and creativity, committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
The project is so beautifully produced. I mean, the story itself is very powerful, but the writing and sound design is just really extremely, extremely well done. It felt you were able to layer discovery on top of discovery as you two were finding out what was going on. But there's also all of this family stuff playing out, again, with Tanya finding out about her dad's, you know, her dad's other family and you, Antonio, getting to know her a little bit. Did you guys have conversations when you first hatched this idea about just how much could be on the table? And then I felt like some of those circumstances maybe changed as we find out different things in the podcast. I mean, can you share anything with us about how you worked it out between yourselves?
Wow. So I will say that a lot of what you hear, I mean, all of what you hear, we conceptualized the show early on. We storyboarded. If you take a look at like our episode 1 through 10 outline, like we had the story locked. Like this is how we were going to tell this story. And then we started interviewing people. And then we started having conversations with ourselves. And we understood that like in order to really tell this story, we're going to have to go deeper than what we were initially thinking about. And that is the beauty of this form, of this medium, is that we don't necessarily have to constrain it based on the bounds of storytelling that we traditionally use to tell stories about families. And, you know, stories of this complexity around drugs and around a city and around a missing person and a murder. You know, this has been the most ambitious project that I've ever done because it's testing my journalistic might. I'm taking my personal life and my personal stories and mixing them with facts about the city and murder investigations and police. And what I am able to piece together and understand is that we really do need to think about breaking form when it comes to being able to tell the totality of a story. There's not, as we know, two sides of the story. There are multiple sides of a story. And if you're really going to get to the full story, you're going to have to go slow and deep. I think that we probably had two different ideas on what this story was going to be in the beginning.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the strength of it was that we approached it with an open mind and an open heart. We knew that there would be some revelations. We knew that it would be some really sketchy details. We knew it'd be heartbreak, but you know, we stepped to it with an open heart and an open mind. And like Tanya said, you know, we took our time and decided to just speak the truth about it and allow that platform for others that were affected by this to also speak their truth.
I also want to add a little bit more to this, April, that we have amazing producers who are working on the show with us. And it's very important to have people from the outside looking into a family story like this, because as much as I, as a seasoned journalist, can say, okay, these are the important parts of the story, it's been throughout this process, my producers who also say, but what about this, and dig into things that I thought weren't important, or I felt like people wouldn't care about or connect with. And so having those extra eyes, that objective eye, but discerning eye, has been so important to us. Because I'll say, for instance, all the stuff around me and Anita's father, I initially didn't see that as an important part of this story. I just thought, oh, this was just something that connects us. But it was through the excavation and the questioning and the interviews that I was able to see, though, it's a real central part of the story if we're talking about a family and family trauma and dysfunction and trying to put the pieces of the puzzle back together again.
I know I'm not the first person to bring up that, you know, this is a pretty common critique of true crime podcasts, is that there's all the intrigue farmed in for the listeners, but often not a lot of empathy for the people that these things actually happen to. Antonio, had you done much listening to, were you much of a podcast guy before this process got started?
Somewhat. I followed a few.
But any true crime?
No true crime. Yeah. You know, like Taya said, this was a pretty ambitious project that, you know, we committed ourselves to it 100%. You know, Taya spearheaded the outlay and the design of it. We collaborated, you know, in a real grassroots level. And, you know, just to lean into it a little bit more. I mean, this is something that didn't happen overnight. We've been speaking cordially building up to this moment for years. So, you know, it took some time, some growth, some experience on both of our parts to arrive at a space and place where we can lay all these facts out and address them head on. So, you know, it was very touching. You know, we cried a lot. We hugged a lot, and we forgave ourselves a lot, you know.
And we're still doing it. That's the thing about it, is that, like, this is our life as well. And after this podcast is over, it still is just the beginning.
Still the beginning. That's right.
Well, the other thing that really jumps out in the episodes is while you're going there in the unspeakable, you got so much beauty into it about your families and your relationship with each other and Anita and her relationship with Antonio and Black families in Detroit in that time. Making sure that the beauty didn't get short shrift, was that a spoken conversation between you two, or more an unspoken understanding that informed what you were doing? Maybe this is more a Tanya question.
You know, it's really easy. You know, you brought up the true crime genre and many of the stories that we see there, where it's almost trauma porn, where you're just going into the deepest, darkest parts of a story and laying them bare in a way that feels extractive. But we are human beings, and there is a lot of love and joy. And if you're going to know Anita, if you're going to know Antonio, if you're going to know me, you actually have to understand that the way that Anita moved, although her life ended so short, she was only 29, the stuff she did was pretty remarkable. She had Antonio when she was 14. At 17, she lost her mother and was abandoned by her stepfather, and she took care of her family and held it down by herself at 17 years old, a 3-year-old son and her siblings. She was a hustler, and I think that we think of that term hustler like in negative terms, but this is positive. And it makes me see that, like, if she had been in a different circumstance, what she would have accomplished. It makes me see myself in a different way too, because it makes me understand something that I always knew growing up in Detroit. There are so many bright stars in Detroit, and in all different circumstances, who, because of their circumstance, are never able to make it out. And I wanted to be able to dig underneath to show you that, but also show you the joyous parts of them, the other parts of them that aren't the darkest parts, because that's what being human is about.
We make podcasts here too. And one of the things that I've found is, you know, you have goals for what you want to do with a project and what you want people to take away from it. Very often, though, you find if you're doing it right, a lot of times what you learn and what you figure out through the writing of it can change yourself as well. Is that anything that resonates with you two on this project?
Yeah. It's definitely changed me, you know. You know, I think initially, you know, Tanya made a conversation, you know, made a point to me during a conversation that we wanted to get it right. What that was, we kind of didn't really know. But we set out with that mission. And like she said, you know, it's a bigger story. You know, it's reflective of Detroit, our family, and families like ours, right? The revelations that came out of this has definitely changed my outlook and, you know, given me a different calling, a different purpose to use the podcast forum to get, you know, get messages like this out there to the people.
Your question is an interesting one about how the story changes as we work on it, but then also how we change and evolve. And I think the moment that we're in now, Antonio and I just recently met with a therapist because it's so important to find a place to process all of this. Now we've like laid ourselves bare, Antonio being the one to really lay himself bare. And it's important for there to be space for him to talk it through and also maybe process some of what he's learned about himself in this during this process. And one of the things he learned is that he wants to be more open. He wants to let people who love him in. You know, when you're dealing with something like this all of your life, I want you to tell it, Antonio, but I'll just share with this with you, April. You know, Antonio shared the bare minimum about his mother to many people. And that's in part because what do you say when someone you don't know or a colleague or a friend that you're just getting to know asks about your mother and you don't really know what happened to her? It just changes the dynamic to say she's missing and she's been missing since 87. It takes on a whole different, the tone of everything. Mm. And so he's been shut down for a very long time. And this process has allowed him to open up in ways that now he can let the people who love him be there for him in ways that maybe weren't accessible before. You want to speak about it a little bit?
Yeah, indeed. That's what trauma does, you know? How do you explain your life, the complexities of your life to strangers, you know? It was a guarded conversation that I've had over the years. But, you know, that came from a place of, you know, protection. And to a degree, you know, like my therapist say, wisdom. So it's been rough. You know, it's been a real journey to hold such truth in. And it shaped me to be a lot more guarded of my past and of my reality. But, you know, at the same token, you know, I've worked really hard to overcome that, that trauma and those effects of growing up in a city where these type of things are so common. So, you know, it wasn't just for me, you know, it was also, you know, for my family and for my friends that I arrive at a space and place where I can share my experiences and also allow me to empathize with others going through such trauma themselves and still haven't found their voice.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes at michiganpublic.org. Today's podcast was produced by Ronia Kapansag. Other producers on our show are Mike Blank, April Van Buren, and our director, Mercedes Mejia. Our intern is Olivia Meradian. Our podcast editor is Rachel Ishikawa. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Music for the pod comes from Blue Dot Sessions and from Audio Network. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.